Every Tuesday, we hop on the 7 line, scoot on down Morton, into the Fernandez Plaza, into City Hall, and knock on the mayor's door. And there's our great friend, Mayor John Hamilton, here on a first day of the week for us, Tuesday afternoon. Good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon, Mike. I'm well. I hope everybody's well there, too. Yes, it's somebody called it a Monday Tuesday. I don't know. Anyway, here we are.
I like it. Let's cram 48 hours into 24 and make it work. We had a tremendously busy weekend here in town. We had, obviously, our first college football game of the season, which brings in a bunch of folks. And on top of that, the other side of, downtown would have had the 4th Street Arts Fair. That's only been happening for 47 years. A little Labor Day Monday for us to all lick our wounds and get back into shape. It was hot, but it was pool. Again, our last days at Bryant Park. We had a very busy weekend to start the month of September.
We did. The city was hopping. And as you said, we've been having the – we have beaten Ohio State during the 4th Street Art Fair's history, so that's good.
That's exactly right.
That is right. But we had a great weekend, and I'm glad people enjoyed it. And I think it all worked relatively well with all those people coming in and out of town.
It's just one big event after another. We're never boring. We've got too many things to do. Did you have any fun this weekend personally?
Oh, I always try to have fun, relax, spend time with my wife, and all's good. A little extra day's good. But, you know, our city runs 24/7, so we got a lot of people busy every day, but I did get to relax a bit.
Good, and hopefully your city council did as well and your staff and everybody. Last week was a very busy week before the Labor Day weekend budget hearings. You told me last Tuesday that, you explained what was going to go on all week long. Were you pleased with what you heard, and what did we hear for those folks who maybe checked out a little early last week?
You know, I always I was in the chambers for every presentation, the four nights, and I'm always – impressed and proud of the city government and the leaders who come in one after the other to explain what we're doing at Housing Authority or Utilities or Bus or Police or Fire or Parks or, you know, Planning and Engineering and everybody. And it went very well. The council had questions, but it was, really good, kept to our time frames. And now, the day today is the deadline to get the council follow-up questions, so we're expecting those by close of business today to get any follow-ups they have, and then we're going to try to get them the answers that they need by next week, and then we have a few more days to kind of settle what we want to do in the budget overall, and I published that, I think, September 15th. We have to put that out, the final numbers, and then it goes to them for a couple more hearings. And, you know, we do it each time, and there's a lot of back and forth, and it feels good so far. I hope we're on track.
All of this is done so it gets done by a certain time. That's why we have these deadlines. Am I reading that correctly?
You're right. This is, you know, cities, as we've mentioned before, cities in Indiana are really a creature of state law. We are created by state law. We exist only under their structure, so they set quite specific rules about how we do budgets and how the process works and the timing. And if we miss the timing and don't pass a budget, then by law we just extend this year's budget identically to next year. So it's all pretty formal, and we've always made it so far as I've been here with a balanced budget. And I expect we will again, but we have to finish that up by October.
And those formal questions will be sent and answered, and everything. Everybody will work out how things go and move along for everything. Any major surprises that caught your ear? Whether it was, I know sometimes in some of the departments, sometimes at the county level, Marty Hawk keeps me in tune about perhaps salaries rising at different rates or things like that. How do we look? Because I think you used the word in there, balanced budget, right? We have to have a balanced budget.
By law, we have to have a balanced budget. We can't spend more than we take in and have on hand, if you will. You know, you have reserves and such. But I think there are some discussions about some salaries, we set out the basic 5% cost of living adjustment that applies to most folks. Some of the unions have their own contracted amounts. We're continuing some emergency transition spending, if you will, another $500 to almost every city employee. We heard some questions about individual salaries, which is always a little tricky that can come up. We heard some questions. I'm sure we'll get dozens and dozens of questions, and those will all be a public document that we get them from the council members, and we put it into a big document, and we give them the answers, and that'll be a public document to answer anything they've still got.
And that's the process. That's how it works, folks. And the dates that come along with it, you get them passed, and that's for 2024. Does that budget start January 1, 2024? Just as simple as that, huh?
It does. A new mayor and a new budget. There you go. We'll look forward to that, and I'm confident it's a really good one. I can't remember if we talked last time. You know, one of the probably the most unusual part of the 2024 budget is we have a $20 million one-time set of funds.
Yes.
It's kind of the last of the federal, and then we have some local. And so I'm going to be giving some more detail to the county council on that today or tomorrow. That'll, I'm sure, have some back and forth. And that's just trying to line up. Basically, it's how we keep this recovery going. You know, we can't forget we are still recovering from COVID and the economic downturn, and our businesses and our employers, our nonprofits are all, you don't snap out of that thing with a click of your heels three times. It takes a lot of work. So that's what this will help us continue to do, I think.
And that money has an expiration date, yes?
The federal money does. It's got to be appropriated and encumbered, which means you kind of have to have it under contract or spent, if you will, by the end of next year, the end of 2024, and then it's got to be actually spent out the door into the hands of the ultimate user by the end of 2 years after that, the end of 2026. Go ahead.
I was going to say my first reaction question would be, if it's recovery money, why has it taken so long if it's that important? Well, you know what I'm trying to say, right?
Yeah, I do. But you know what? Getting it out and all spent by 2026 is actually pretty fast.
Okay.
Think about how long it takes to do things, if it's housing programs, if it's infrastructure investments, if it's recovery. Now, the money that we used, for example, to pay police salaries and other salaries in the middle of the crisis so we didn't have to lay people off, that happens quickly, immediately. And that's some of the money. But a lot of this money is meant, how do you help nonprofits, you know, get back on their feet? How do you help small businesses continue to grow? How do you help create more climate, you know, advances and infrastructure projects? And those, they just take time. So I do have to say, I think if you look at the impact of the stimulus money, the recovery money, I'm not an economist, but most people who look at it say that it's been really helpful to keep our unemployment from skyrocketing and hunger from skyrocketing and some of the poverty measures. And so, you know, we're really proud, but it does have a time limit, but it's pretty strict compared to some of the stuff we do.
Mayor John Hamilton is our guest this afternoon. He joins us every Tuesday just after 4:05, and getting caught up on some, again, things from last week before we all dove into the Labor Day weekend. Well, you announced that coming up this Thursday, A Tale of Two Towns, Bloomington and Palo Alto. You've told us, sibling cities. What do you got on the books for us coming up on Thursday?
Oh, there's a couple things. So on Thursday is a special lecture by Professor Douglas Hofstadter. I don't know if you know that name. He's one of IU's luminaries, a Pulitzer Prize winner and kind of philosopher historian. And he's going to be talking, I believe, mostly about artificial intelligence at the public library. And that's a joint Palo Alto Bloomington event. And then a week and a half after that, on the 17th, I think it is, of September, and Sunday, is the first of three community conversations between the two cities. There's more detail on our website or social media if you want about both of those things. And they're all free. I think they're really interesting. the last time was Molly Cuddle. We turned that into a sibling city, and Douglas Hofstetter does not play the banjo, but he's pretty interesting, I think. So check that out.
Did you see what Molly Tuttle did over the Labor Day weekend?
I did not.
She opened for the Dave Matthews Band at the Gorge in Washington State. So, since she's left here, she's done Austin, City Limits, and opened for Dave Matthews. I'd just say this was the springboard. That's what the Grammy Award winner. And artificial intelligence, I've been accused of having that for years and years and years. Mayor John Hamilton is our guest today. And I think it was Friday of last week, the question I asked you last Tuesday. Hey, couple appointees, you're trying to work through some things to get folks on the the convention center,
Improvement Board.
The word I'm looking for. And our old friend, that Mick Renhuizen, he's retired. Since he's retired, he's had 9 more jobs.
Yeah, I'm really pleased that I got 2, I think, very excellent people to bring their judgment and their vision and energy to that board. One is the former deputy mayor, former parks director, Mick Renhuizen, who has been involved in the convention center business and project for a long time. And then Adam Teese, who's a IU executive administrator, who's also, he actually had the kind of the top planning and community development job up in Indianapolis a few years ago, and he's now working for IU. And the two of them have, I think, a really good grounding in what makes communities and downtowns do well and how a convention center can be part of that. So I put those two on the board. That fills it up to 6. The 6 of them will then pick a 7th member, and then they got to start figuring out what happens next. As you and I have said, I'm still kind of trying to navigate with the county what's called the interlocal agreement, which goes into the details of how all this will work with terms of money and terms of process and approvals and all that. We got a little work to do there, but
does that have a deadline?
Both of those guys stood up. That does not really have a deadline.
Okay.
We do have the state law that says by December 1, the city has to give a plan of what we're going to spend out of the food and beverage tax next year. The county has to do that for their component as well. So that's kind of the next formal deadline that we have to be sure to meet.
Gotcha. And the reason I didn't bring up Adam's name is I had no idea how to pronounce it. I figured you did. So I just led you right into that. So the group of 6 now will come together and pick number 7 based on the requirements and legality?
That's the plan, I think, under the statute and the commissioner's resolution that they passed.
Now, I want you to remind our listeners, because I think this is fascinating, the people that you have appointed, their term ends when?
Their term ends January 15th in 2024. So
2024.
4 months from now.
Okay, right. 4 months. And then you told me just a second ago that December 1st, we got to have a pretty good layout of how we're going to do this money, where it's going to come from, our plan to spend it. Well, that doesn't sound like a lot of time to get things done. How quickly do these projects usually move, Mayor Hamilton, if we get everybody into place? Are those numbers quick? Are those not fast enough? Where do we stand?
Well, look, this is a big, complicated project to build a new convention center expansion. It's going to be at least 3 years, probably 4 years from now before it can be done, if all things go well. And a lot of things have to go to well, and planning and design and bidding and construction and all that stuff, and partnerships that will be real important. The immediate deadlines are the city. We just need to present a plan of what money to spend next year, and then we have to be sure that that money is spent. So that means we will produce a pretty conservative plan, because you don't want to say you're going to spend more than you will. You can always add money during the year next year. So I think we'll be able to do that fine, and I'm sure the county can do the same for their little slice of food and beverage money. But the CIB's got a lot of work, and there's still a lot of issues. You and I have talked about that, to try to make sure they're positioned to produce a great downtown project, which I've been angling for a number of years, and pretty soon I'll hand the ball over to somebody else to work on that.
That will be on January 1 of 2024. Yeah. Joyce Poling and John Weikart, that's the Monroe County Board of Commissioners appointees. Adam Tease and Mick Renheisen for Mayor John Hamilton, and then Eric Spoonmore and Doug Bruce. That's the six who will pick the seventh. And Doug Bruce, as everybody knows, is Tabor Bruce Architects in there, and we know Eric's with us every other Monday. So that will be next on their list. Busy, busy times. Busy times happening here. And we're looking to build all kinds of things. I saw a headline today in the Herald Times about perhaps using some downtown parking lots in the future for more housing. Where did that genesis come from? And I know this, you speak about the convention center taking a while to build. This isn't something that's going to happen overnight either. There's a survey happening. Well, just fill our listeners in if you could.
Sure. You know, it was actually this year in the budget time and budget discussions that we heard from city council and other voices that said, hey, you know, everybody knows affordable housing is a huge challenge. How do we help more people live here? We've worked hard on that at Hopewell and Trades District and all across the city. We generated actually almost 1,400 units of affordable housing over the last 7 years, but there was always need for more. And so we actually got a request from council, and we made a commitment that we would review the possibility of shifting one of three downtown surface parking lots, whether we could use it more effectively as affordable housing. And that here we are in September. That's a lot. As you said, that's not a thing you do overnight. We've had a lot of feedback during the spring and summer, and now there's a survey out, and we're looking at those. We're talking to the people who use the lots, talk to the people around the lots. And I personally think it's probably a good idea. We've invested in garages. Surface parking lots downtown are probably not generally the highest, best use of property. You can do a lot of things that are more impactful and valuable for the land that's, you know, a couple million bucks an acre or something like that downtown. So we're looking at that, and those, you know, the three are the one by the library on Lincoln and 6th, Lincoln and 6th, the one at 4th and Dunn by the Restaurant Row, and then the one at 4th and Washington behind the Buskirk Jumley and Comedy Attic and that kind of thing. And they each have pluses and minuses, and we're going to be looking at that and thinking about it.
The long term, of all three of those lots, I want to point out it's going to be one of the three, correct? Not all three or two out of three?
Yeah, the first plan is really to look at one. It's probably worth noting, too, Mike, that, you know, this happens in the private sector quite a bit. Like, if you looked today at the downtown and compared it to 10 years ago, you would find significant numbers of surface lots that have been converted to buildings.
Oh, sure.
The Yellow Cab building, the yes. Buildings on Morton Street just across from the south of City Hall. You know, that look at Hopewell. Hopewell's a bunch of surface lots that are.
The Hilton Garden Inn used to be a parking garage, a surface
there
parking garage, right?
Yeah. So it happens a lot in the private sector where you'll have a private investor say, hey, I'm willing to pay more for that lot than you're making as a parking lot, and somebody will sell it. In the public sector, it's a little different because we don't typically have people coming to try to buy it from us, but that's what we're exploring. And, you know, if you can create, I think I saw one of our planners say for every parking spot, you can probably create a unit of housing, because you'll be three or four stories up, you know, and, that's pretty important to think about if 50 parking places can be turned into 50 apartments for families to live in all the time. They don't generate that much money if you really look at the revenue side. So we'll see, but it'll take incrementally, and, you know, first look at one, and if that works, then we may continue that. But you're going to see that happening kind of throughout the city, I think, because surface lots are kind of, you know, they're a low value use in a lot of ways of very, very valuable property.
Yeah, and there's some of those, yeah, as you mentioned, in the downtown area. Would the plans moving forward have to fit all of other zoning codes and heights and all of that stuff?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
I don't want people to think it's going to be a 9-story tall building, or something like that.
No. And look, it's all kind of incremental stuff. So I hope, you know, we'll see what happens this year, and then if it produces something people like and makes sense, we'll move forward. We do have adequate parking garage space. Part of this is a cultural thing, kind of getting used to using garages more. And you know, if you drive downtown Chicago, you're not going to see very many surface lots, right? You're gonna get used to that. Same in Indianapolis, really, in a lot of ways. But it's a sign of change, I think.
With the new convention center being planned and everything else that goes along with that, we're going to add parking to that as well. It's not going to be static, where we're just going to add all this great business and great other things and go with what we've got, correct? That's the hope.
A lot of convention center planning does involve two major allies, if you will, in that, and that is a hotel space and a parking space. You definitely need places for people to sleep if they come to conventions and stay in your community for a couple, 3 days. And now there's a different debate about, you know, how many parking spaces you need, because we continue to try to evolve. Are there ways people can get from the airport to the convention center? And if you're here in the convention center, maybe you don't need a car if you're right downtown. You know, you may not want a car. But, you know, the current site of the convention center has lots of surface parking around it. And then, of course, the new garage on 4th Street is just a half a block from one of the sites that we're looking at. And we got other garages. But those two things, hotel spaces and parking facilities, are both going to be part of any convention center planning.
Gotcha. And I've read in the article, I think it's Boris Ladwig, I always like to give credit, Boris Ladwig. A lot of people interviewed for this are using the word housing crisis. What is the difference between a shortage and a crisis for those who don't follow it? Is it a scientific explanation, or is it a feel explanation? How does that terminology work?
It kind of sounds like that old phrase, a recession is when your neighbor doesn't have a job, and a depression is when you lose your job.
Right. I mean,
part of it's in the eye of the beholder, right? We are in a serious housing need. I would call it a crisis. I think it's actually all through the United States to figure out how to help people live affordably. Bloomington is a very expensive place. So whether you call it a crisis or a shortage,
okay,
it's serious. It needs investment. You know, we're putting millions of dollars in it each year to try to advance it. And as I said, we've just, you know, for you to know, the previous 8 years, to when I came in, we did fewer than 100 total units, 50-something total units of affordable housing. We've done almost 1,400, so more than a 20-fold increase in pace of getting affordable units. But it's not enough. We got to keep going, and we will.
There you have it, folks. That's how we figure it out. What about the? I had somebody ask me in the entrance to the park on the east side. Looks like there's an elevator shaft up. How's progress coming along there? It looks a little, I don't know, slow, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, you know, that it is moving. It has been slow. That's a development, a retreat at Switchyard, it's called. We cut the ribbon on that. Broke ground, I mean, a while ago. They ran into serious underground issues. Where it actually turned out that it was nobody knew it. It was a dumping ground for giant limestone blocks, and it was just a disaster. They couldn't sink any pylons down there. It was really a mess. So they've dealt with that. They are now coming out of the ground. That's exciting. That's 64 apartments. Three quarters of them are affordable. One quarter of them are market rate, including some dedicated to people with disabilities who can be able to live right by the park. So we're really excited about that, and you can watch it come out of the ground. The two elevator shafts are up, and I think the rest will be following.
I knew there had to be some reason that was grinding to a halt, because I remember the ribbon cutting and talking about it. I'm like, well, that's just weird. Well, there has to be. There always is a reason for that. Thank you for your time, as always. We will get caught up next Tuesday and see what else is happening. And there is never a dull moment in a good way. We're busy. There's tons of things going on. We'll follow the progress of the budget and the hearings and everything that goes along with that and hit all the big headlines as well.
Mike, thank you for your attention to all this and your listeners. We appreciate it, and be happy. Look forward to talking to you next week. I hope everybody has a good week.